On this episode of Still Loading, King Hippo himself. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this new episode of the Still Loading Podcast. I'm your host, Josh Koval, and today on the show, I have an incredible guest with me. Today, I have an actor, a voice actor, a musician, someone who kind of runs the gamut on all these different disciplines. He has over 400 credits on, according to IMDb, to his name. For listeners of the show, it is a video game podcast, so you might know him best as King Hippo from Captain N the Game Master. He's also, you've done work in Sonic the Hedgehog. I'm completely scratch? No. Grounder in one show, Dr. Robotnik in another, just all over. He's Dr. Light in Mega Man, so many video game cartoons. But you may also know him more famously as Optimus Primal from Beast Wars. I have Gary Chalk on the show with me today. Gary, how are you doing today?
I'm pretty good. I'm having a little bit of a crisis this morning, but actually not too bad, and I think it's curable. So, with any luck, it'll be solved by tomorrow. So that'll be fun. Flat tire, you know. But otherwise, I'm doing pretty good. It's a beautiful sunny day out here today, and I'm just up here in my little airy enjoying the sunshine. So.
That's good to hear. Thank you so much for setting aside some time for this. I've been listening to the show. As you know, we've been doing this Captain N the Game Master rewatch series. So having a voice actor from the show has been actually a goal of mine for quite some time. But before we get to Captain N and any specifics of that, just for the listeners to get to know you a little better, what first got you into acting? Was it something that you pursued ever since you were a kid, or was it something you kind of happened to fall in love with later on?
Well, the funny thing is that, you know, I did a play, you know, a kid's play when I was like in grade two, and I quite enjoyed it in elementary school. And then when I got to high school, I sang in a choir as well, which was fun. And then we got to be televised on called Ron Morier's kids party on Saturday morning, and we got to sing with my choir on the show, and I was completely entranced with how the set worked and all the big video, because they had those giant videos and all the lights, and I thought, this is amazing, and I was quite intrigued by it, and I quite liked it, but I didn't think anything of it until I got to high school and started participating in, you know, local theater and musical theater, because I'm also a singer. So there was that, and never thought of doing it for a living. And then one day I was working as a stock trader at the stock exchange, and got laid off along with a lot of other people. And I just thought, well, I better go back to school. I got to learn something else. And so, I went back to school ostensibly to be an English teacher and anthropology teacher. Two of my favorite things. But one of my English projects was to go down and watch a play at the theater department at the college. And I went there, and they were doing a show called Of Mice and Men.
Mm.
The production value was amazing. The acting was incredible. And I thought, holy moly, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. And so I auditioned. And the person who had auditioned me, who was eventually turned into a very good friend, was a fellow named Anthony Holland, turned around to me and he goes, well, you've got some talent. All right, we'll see you. And I got in the school. What I didn't realize is they only take 15 students from across the country.
Oh, wow.
To be in the school. And now it's, you know, they're rated one of the top theater schools around with an A+ rating. So we've got foreign students from Brazil and Europe and Ukraine, and we just did a special deal for Ukrainian refugees, and we got they're from all over the world, our students. So it's been rated one of the top theater schools around anywhere, and I just felt so blessed to be a part of that. And I started actually working about. I started getting paid for acting about 3 weeks before I finished school.
Okay.
Because
just in the nick of time.
We were doing a show called Jacques Brel's Alive and Well Living in Paris, and it was so popular that they held it over at the school. Okay. And because it was held over after we were finished school, they had to pay us. It was a very small amount, like $100 or something, but that was back in the 70s. And I've just been going ever since. As I say, it's not an occupation, it's an avocation. And just continued on with it and worked in the theater and basically done everything, singing, telegrams, you name it. I remember doing jobs as a greeter at conventions of murder mysteries and kissing bandits, those weird costume telegram deliveries, clownograms and all that, and did those and everything, but they all contributed to overall experience, and that's basically how I got started in my career.
You did like singing telegram stuff. Do you have any like interesting stories from doing that? Did you ever like have to deliver one of those telegrams that it was just one of the most either awkward or like funny experiences doing that, or was it all just kind of like a blur?
Well, there were two. I'll give you two examples. Okay. One was quite touching. Was I was sent to the hospital in my clown costume to liven up somebody who was in hospital and not feeling well, and they wanted to bump up their spirits, and I went and sang Zippity Doodah. Yay, bye, oh my, it's a wonderful day, but did that whole thing and went into them at their bedside, and they were quite happy with that, and so it turned out to be a pleasant experience all around, and the nurses loved it. They all clapped. So
yeah,
that was fun. And then on the other one, I was playing Fernando, the kissing bandit, with the mustache and the mask like Zorro. And I was at the Secretary of State in Ottawa.
Okay.
That's where I was doing it. And I walked into this massive boardroom, and there were all these people from all over the place. And the assistant secretary of state was sitting at the table. And I said, I am looking for Amanda.
Oh, my goodness.
And everybody looks at me, and they start giggling. And she looks at me and she goes, you're not going to take your clothes off, are you?
Oh, my goodness.
I said, no, I am Fernando. I am a lover, not a stripper.
That says two things. One, the fact that she wasn't surprised someone called in
she was surprised.
But the fact that her reaction wasn't like, who are you and why are you here? Like it almost sounded like she's like, okay, this is something my friends would do to me. But then the more telling thing is like, her first thought was, are you a stripper? Like her mind went straight to that. Oh, that's so funny.
The bolero hat and the mask.
Yeah.
But it was very funny. And I sang Fernando's Hideaway. Fernando's Hideaway. And that was a good laugh. So I did that. And it's like you run the whole gamut. But the greatest thing I enjoyed about that is that everything I did contributed to the overall experience and the overall skill set that brought me here today.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm game. I was game for everything. I remember doing my very first cartoon. was in Ottawa in 1983, and it was called Hiawatha.
Okay.
Now, today, I would never get away with it because of cultural appropriation, blah, blah, blah. But I played Hiawatha, and I played Hiawatha's dad, and I played the villain,
mm-hmm.
and I played an old lady in it, too.
Just all of the roles.
Every role broken, every rule broken today, but not then. But it was at Atkinson Film Arts in Ottawa. They're the ones who did Fritz the Cat and Heavy Metal and Man Who Skied Down Everest and all those things. And so that was my first experience with cartoons. And I quite loved it. I loved doing all the voices in that. It was for Kenner Classics for Nickelodeon. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun. And then when I got back to Vancouver, the first thing I did was look up, you know, what's going on in the voice world. And because I was, you know, branching out into voiceover as well. And one of my first earliest jobs was a thing called Death Defying Plants for IKEA.
Oh, okay.
And so the Death Defying Plant sale, you know, when even your favorite Diefenbachia is pushing up the daisies, Death Defying Plants. How would I the Death Defying Plant sale? But that was my first ad, but it won an award.
Oh, okay.
That's a great ad. And when it won the award, all of a sudden I started getting more, and I started getting, you know, commercials for various things like Toyota and General Motors and Chrysler and all these things. And then more cartoons came along, and I was sort of disheartened because I did a couple of auditions, didn't get them. And I said, what? What do you mean I didn't get it? Didn't get it. But that was brilliant. Well, yes, but not brilliant enough, I guess. But anyway, they had a different choice. So I studied. I watched cartoons. I studied all the voices, all the different kinds of voices. And the next time I went in, I was prepared. And I did some voice matches for G.I. Joe.
Mm.
Got that. And then I did Barbie and the Rockers, got that. And then it just started getting more and more. And then I got King Hippo, which is in the 80s, from Captain Nan, and plus a bunch of other characters on there. And it just went from there. It started getting series after series. I was working constantly for years and years.
And
I still do stuff now. But
I was going to say, a lot of times when I see, you know, people who do voiceover, it's usually they stick primarily to voiceover. You branch, like you said, you branch out all over the place. I'm like looking through your credits. You have a wide variety of live action work, like just acting on screen to voiceover. Yeah. And as you said, you're also a musician. I was going to ask, like, is there one you perform more than the other? Or is it just kind of like whatever you're kind of like, either or, it doesn't matter. I like them both.
Well, at one time, it used to be like 60% voice, 40% film.
Mm-hmm.
And then one year it'd be 60% film, 40% voice. These days, more like 80% film, 20% voice. Mm-hmm. And the reason is quite simple. It's just age. You know, a lot of the cartoons have really young characters in them, like the teenagers or young 20s and whatnot. And they'll have the occasional old guy. And then when one of those voices comes along, then I'll probably get it. Like, it just, you know, I did some Ninjago and Nexo Knights. It was another one. And there's another one I can't talk about that's coming out, a big, you know, the 40 episode or 30 episode show. Okay. That's quite funny. And I think people will love it when it comes out. That's enough. I can't talk about it, but there you go.
NDAs, man. NDAs.
Yeah. They're bane of my existence. So I'm still active in that area, but the commercial world has sort of gone by the wayside these days because it's all mostly non-union.
Mm.
And a lot of people are going to Voice Bank, Fiverr, Voices 123, all these sort of online, to me, they're just exploitative. I just find them exploitive because, you know, I remember doing a U.S. national commercial and getting paid like $20,000 for it.
Yeah.
And that, And then you do go on to Fiverr and say, well, I'll do it for $50. Or I'll do it $100 or $500. And, you know, and people do that. And they've got, so that's basically put us union guys out of business. And mostly for them, I mean, if they can do that. But I just think that I'd much rather be, you know, my union guy, and I cannot do non-union work because it's just, well, I just can't do it.
Yeah, no, it's because that's how the union rules work. I get it. And but I'm with you. I feel like that is really exploitative. It's not the same, but it kind of reminds me of like that push recently with all the AI voice stuff that's been like starting to come up, where it's just,
oh yeah, you hear that on the on commercials and call centers and
yeah.
Oh, and you expect on YouTube today. We have looking at this one. There's still, so do you want to be this way or do you want to be that way? You know, and they sound sort of natural.
Yeah, there's some ones that are coming out now that are more, but I don't like that they're pushing it. Like, it doesn't need to. Otherwise you're just like, I don't know. It's a whole rant of mine. I dislike the AI and art stuff. Like whether it's actual, like whether it's like paintings or like visual art or whether it's, I don't know. It bothers me that that's even getting pushed, but I could rant about that for hours. What I was going to ask was, what do you find more challenging or what are some challenging aspects of both VO and live acting on film? Like, what are some of the different challenges that each of them pose?
Well, for cartoons, for animation, is the biggest challenge is getting it off the page and being consistent from the beginning to the end.
Mm-hmm.
Of the show, because that happens. I mean, you can hear it in if you watch an old episode of The Simpsons, and then watch a new episode of The Simpsons, you can see the evolution of the voice. The voice has evolved from this basic voice, like especially Homer, to the voice that's now.
Mm.
It's totally different. I mean, the same tone, but totally different voices, and you hear the voices evolve over the course of years, and characters get better and better and more funny at what they do, and so there's that challenge, just keep that consistency and to basically create that world, you know, create the world in your head and then put it on tape so that the animators draw that world and it makes sense and it works. And that people care about those characters, whether they're bad guys or good guys. If people don't care about you, then you're not doing your job.
Yeah.
With film, like I've been working in film for 40 years, over 40 years, and I love the challenge. I love the technical aspect of filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one of the challenges is the old expression is you act for free, you get paid to wait. Because you spend a lot of time waiting.
That's what I keep hearing.
Yeah. But I as I've worked in almost every kind of film genre, and when you're doing it, it's like, you know, you hit your marks, you gotta get your light right, and you're working with other actors, and then you're working off camera and you're looking at sight lines. So technically, it's a challenge, but it's a wonderful challenge. And the other thing, yeah, of course, you have to memorize all your lines, and you have to make it. You have to be honest and vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
That's very important, because the one thing that that people don't understand is that, well, people who don't act don't understand is that the camera never lies. It looks at you. And it catches everything, every eye movement, twitch, whatever.
Yeah.
And hear tone, right? So if you make a dishonest remark or a dishonest performance, people watching, even though they're not trained, they look at you and they go, I don't believe you.
Yeah.
And, you know, you say, well, oh, he sucked in that movie. Why did he suck? I don't know. I just didn't like. Why didn't you like him? I don't know. But you don't know. But it's because you didn't believe him. You didn't care. So it's a real challenge to be in the moment and be a natural and be believable on screen, because it never lies. And that's basically it. And you're also working ensemble with other people. So
I hadn't thought of it that way before. Like when you see, like you're saying, like, why is someone bad in a movie? And you might not always have an answer. I never thought about it. I wonder if there's like an element of the uncanny valley in that, right? Like where we're watching someone make a performance and it's not quite human. Like, I understand we understand they are human, but they're not quite quite hitting that mark to make it, like you said, authentic. They're not being honest with the character.
That's the thing. Yeah.
It feels almost uncanny valley-ish, but in a little bit, because most people think of it as like, you know, you see a creepy doll and it's so close to being human that it's not, it makes you uncomfortable. I wonder if this is like kind of like a tamed down version of that. It's like, they're so close to being a real character, but they're not. So you kind of get that bit of an uncanny valley edge to it. I don't know. Sorry.
Yeah, it's very bizarre. It's like, you know, you don't like them. You just don't know why you don't like them. And it's really annoying. And you said, why don't I like this character? Or why do I like? Like, when I watched the other night, The Darkest Hour. It was the Gary Oldman playing Winston Churchill.
Okay.
And I was watching this movie. I was completely enwrapped, you know, engrossed in his performance. And all the performance. There wasn't a false note in the entire movie. And I'm watching all these people, and they were, all of them, even the smallest little parts, were so great because they were so there. And you can't take your eyes off him. When he does that speech about, you know, we will fight them in the air, we'll fight them on land, on sea, we will never surrender. You know, remember that? All that. And I'm watching, and I'm just getting chills listening to him. It's just like when you hear a really good singer, you get that thing up the back of your neck, that spine tingly kind of feeling up the back of that when you hear someone who's just really knocking it out of the park. And it's like, you know, that's what it is. It's how it resonates with you, you know? I mean, a lot of people can watch the stuff that's, I don't know. What did I watch the other day that I saw a funny bit? It was one of those video clips that they have on Instagram of, you know, never mess with somebody who, if you don't know what their skills are, blah, blah, blah. And you hear the performances and you just cringe. You go, oh man, this is really bad. Or like really bad dubbing in a foreign movie. But now the dubbing is really good, I'm finding.
It's funny because like sometimes when sometimes with the bad dubs, especially for a movie, you end up really liking, you almost get Stockholm syndromed into the bad dub sometimes, where it's like, now, like for example, like I love like older Jackie Chan movies, but some of those older dubs aren't the greatest.
Oh no.
And now when I watch it in like the authentic Chinese with subtitles, it's harder for me to watch because I'm like, well, I kind of like this bad dub now. I've been like Stockholm syndromed into this. I know I need to divorce myself from it. I need to get rid of it. But what I was going to ask, are there any roles of yours? We've been kind of talking nebulously about like a lot of the different roles you've had, and we've touched on a lot. Are there any different roles of yours that you feel like don't get enough love? Like, is there anything that like you were really proud of and it just didn't click for some reason, or you don't hear a lot of people talking about it? Because A, I always like checking out new things, and B, I'm sure my audience would too. And I always feel like there's at least one project that like, I was really proud of this, but no one ever asked me about it.
Yeah. Well, I really don't know. I mean, I'm very proud of my work on a show called Tribal.
Mm-hmm.
Thought my work was really good in Tribal, and not much exposure about that. I'm really proud of everything I do most of the time, you know, because I just give it my 100%. Everything I do, I give 100%. You know, and it might be a shitty movie, or even, you know, a mediocre movie, but I'll give it the best that I got. And so to that extent, well, one thing that sort of got me is that I created that role of Primal, of Optimus Primal.
Mm-hmm.
And people rave about that performance, and a lot of people, but the powers that be have ignored me for a couple of times for the couple of the Transformers franchises. I've just not even given me an audition or a look or even an ask. Like this latest one, they've hired Ron Perlman to play my character. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, why do I not get a look in?
Yeah.
Do I not exist? I just don't understand. And the fans are quite perplexed. I get fans who are mad at me because I'm not doing that show, which is bizarre because they think I made the choice not to do it.
Yeah.
And I said, no, I was never asked, never given the opportunity. So they gave it to Ron Perlman because he's got cachet, you know?
Yeah.
And me, I don't have the cachet because we don't have that same system in Canada as they have in the States.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I were working in the United States now, I'd be a multi-millionaire because I work all the time, right? But here it's not the same, and I would be more well known in America because I would be promoted more in America. But I'm not one for I gotta say quite honestly, I'm not one for self promotion.
Mm-hmm.
I do it. I don't, you know, put it out there. I might, you know, put something on my fan page every once in a while, and maybe put something on Instagram once in a while. But I don't really sell myself. So I guess that's one question there. I never really feel sort of underrated because the people that I work with they go, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, but because I remember I have coached people and talked people, and, you know, it takes people a couple of hours to get through a couple of scenes of an animation scene to make it good enough that it could be broadcast.
Yeah.
And I will walk into the studio and do four shows and be the lead in the show and do four shows in like 2 hours, you know,
that's
and wild. Do all the because that's experience. And that's, you know, that's what happens. You can do it. But no, I've never had any complaints from any show or any series. I just worked. I guess I could. Can I? No, I just worked on a show as a guest star on a hot show.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the directors and producers say, man, oh man, I can't wait to have you back on the show. So I'm going, it's all good enough for me, thanks. You know.
Well, what I was meaning by before was something like a project that you worked on that was underloved. It wasn't necessarily about your performance specifically, but I was more or less going at like, maybe there was a show that you loved working on and that show specifically just didn't, like you said, Tribal, like that show, you love how that show is. It just, maybe it's just not catching on. So I was trying to bring more awareness to like a specific project type
another
of thing.
Show that another show that I did that was fantastic, but got overshadowed by a Jerry Bruckheimer show called Cold Case. Was a show called Cold SWAT.
Okay.
I did for seven years on that show, and you know, 70 episodes or whatever it was. I did a lot of episodes on the show, and it was a brilliant show. It was really, really good, and I got nominated for one best actor in a supporting role in a Canadian series 2 years in a row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it just basically just gets unnoticed. It's been overshadowed by Cold Case and it sort of disappeared. And it was Canada's number one rated program for years. But then money spoke and canceled, and they picked up Cold Case, and
that's, you know, the rest was history. Now to get into something more specific, I've been talking about it all throughout the episode, Captain N the Game Master. I first want to know, because, you know, my friend Dexter and I, we've been doing this rewatch series on the podcast where once a month we watch an episode of Captain N the Game Master, and then we devote a whole episode to talking about it. Usually our episodes are 50 minutes, which is twice as long as the actual episode of the cartoon, which I find like just breaking down the lunacy of it. It's the funny, the good parts, the bad parts, things we liked, things we didn't like. It's been a lot of fun. And one of the things we have consistently come back to is we love your role as King Hippo. Just for the character is just insane. Like, King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard are just some of the goofiest characters we've ever witnessed in cartoons. And just,
what do you mean?
And actually, speaking of Eggplant Wizard, one of Dexter's questions that he had for you was, did you ever get to record in studio with Michael Donovan, the voice actor for Eggplant Wizard? And did you get to ever improv together with him?
Yes. Michael Donovan and I have been working on cartoons together for 30 years.
That's wonderful.
And I have worked with him as a fellow voice actor, and I've also worked with him as a director.
Mm.
He directed a lot of the shows. He directed a lot of the shows I was in, Conan the Barbarian, and I think Littlest Pet Shop, Transformers, Beast Wars, Beast Machine, Reboot. Yeah, lots of different shows that we've done over the years, and we used to have some fun. I just remember. Excuse yourself, pig. Mother Brain's gonna kill us. Slay me. Because, come on, Mother Brain. But I just always remember that. And
sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
No worries. Go ahead.
I was just gonna say, one of my favorite jokes is just you kind of riffing there reminded me of it. There is an episode where you guys, it was like there was a genie in the bottle, and the final wish of the episode was to turn like Mother Brain and the evil and King Hippo and Eggplant Wizard into stooges, like to make them dumb, and you guys all went into a Three Stooges bit for the rest of the episode.
Because I think I played the part of the genie, and I go, what are we going to do? Oh, no, I was the mayor. No, I think I was the genie, but he had the sort of Ed Wynn kind of will.
Yes, he did. That's exactly it.
Yeah, I remember that. Oh, Jesus, that was fun. That was a great, great, funny cartoon. I really liked it. I liked the stories of it. I liked the story because they were fun, and they weren't particularly violent. And Venus was in that too. And a guy named Matt Hill, he played Captain N. He was just a kid.
Yeah. And
AJ, Alessandro Giuliani, was the little guy with the wings.
Kid Icarus, yes.
Kid Icarus, that's the one. And, Jesus. I remember our director going, the director's name was, come on, Gary. It's so long ago. I mean, we're talking like over 30 years ago.
I mean, I'm
Levin Levy.
Let's see. Does it?
Rosen. Got it.
What is it? Sorry.
Stu Rosen.
Okay.
And I remember him. He was a madman, and he would hit the desk. The transducer, the monitor for the for the director to speak to it in the studio,
mm-hmm.
was right where his hand was, and he'd slam it. It'd be like a cannon going off, and it'd be going. And AJ or Alessandro was playing Kid Icarus, and he was just a young kid, and he was putting it out, and he's going, age, more energy, age. And I'm going, Stu, stop hitting the desk. Yes. There's a little short guy, I remember, Stu Rosen. He was also a cartoon actor as well. And him and I worked on a few shows together. We did, I think it was Salty's Lighthouse or something was another show. But yeah, I'll never forget that. But all those guys were great because we grew up with them all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then Matt Hill was just a young lad, and he went on to be a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle, and,
mm-hmm.
and Alejandro is now a well-renowned film actor and writer, and everybody in there was amazing. Venus is still around. I mean, I see her every once in a while, and Mike Donovan is directing mostly. He lives in Los Angeles now.
Do you remember working with Andrew Cavadas at all? He was Simon Belmont in the show.
Simon Belmont. Oh, him. I actually talked to Andrew 2 days ago.
Oh wow,
It's his birthday.
Oh, that's. I mean, this is going to be out way after that, but happy belated birthday, Andrew. If you for some reason listen to this.
No, Andrew Cavadas. I've worked with him quite a few times, and yeah, I remember him as Simon Belmont. Yeah,
it's just so what I love about the show is that it wasn't afraid. Like, I don't know if it was due to just, you know, it was compared to the source material of the games, a lot of the characters weren't like the games. And I kind of love that it allowed them to kind of go a little bit further. I know some people don't like the continuity stuff, but like Simon Belmont was this like surfer boy kind of bro, and it was just such an interesting choice. And I don't mean interesting in a bad way. That's not passive aggressive. It's just like it is an interesting choice, and it just made it makes us laugh every time, just because it doesn't fit with the game, and I kind of love that for the show in a weird sense.
Not the brightest light in the chandelier.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. I was going to ask that with Captain N. Do you remember what your audition process was like for that? Do you remember going out for that role or what it was like right before then?
Yes, I think Doug Parker was holding the auditions, and I got a picture, a photo, of, you know, a picture of the character. And he said, you know, can you do a voice for this guy? And I said, okay. So I looked at him. I looked at him. He's a big, lumbering guy, and he had this big, jowly kind of face. And I thought, you know, I want to make him so different from Eggplant, because Eggplant, like, he didn't have a mouth that fully functioned. So he's an Eggplant, but. I recall I'm walking in, and I went, what did I say? I said, oh, please, Mother Brain, don't kill us. Like that. And I think it was that got me the part. Because I did this, you know, like a big, you know, a big palooka kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah, the big boxing gloves and mm-hmm. all that. And that's what I gave for the voice. And they liked that. And they called me back and they said, can you do this again? And they matched me up with Mike Donovan, I believe. And Mike Donovan was playing Eggplant. And he came up with that voice. And they said, that's what we want. And so then they hired me. And I went back over the moon. I mean, it was just so much fun. And this is the one thing that I really liked, about those early days when we were doing cartoons.
Mm-hmm.
Every voice, every single voice in those shows was different from everybody else. When you heard them, you knew, I know who that character is. You know exactly who that character, oh shoot, here we go. Yeah, okay. I know exactly who that is. And mm-hmm. These days, I'm looking at a lot of cartoons. I can't tell who's who, you know?
Yeah.
The voices are all sound very, very similar. So they're kind of madcap and crazy, but there's not a lot of differentiation, except for maybe, you know, My Little Pony is pretty different. I like all the voices in that. And but they, like some of the newer ones, I'm sort of at a loss. I love Disenchantment. That's very funny.
Disenchantment's really great. The Matt Groening one, right? The newer
Groening one.
Yeah.
Arcane. Have you seen that?
I don't think I have, actually.
It's on Netflix. Wow.
I'll check that out. Okay.
Stories, acting, artwork, blow your mind.
So with as King Hippo, it kind of got me thinking, that voice sounds like it might, is doing King Hippo, is that tough on your vocal cords? Is that like tough to do that for long periods of time?
Not really.
No?
Now it might be a little tougher on me because my vocal cords are older, but back then, I could do that voice all day.
God, I love King Hippo. When I heard it, it sounded like something that would like be it would tire out your vocal cords fast. So that's kind of interesting to me. Like it doesn't. Do you have any characters that you've done before that like it would be hard for you to maintain after a while? Like it's something you could only do for short bursts.
The orcs on the War Planets video game.
Mm.
Attack! You know, doing all that. Yeah, do that for a couple hours and then you're, I'm done.
I do not blame you. And since we are still on Captain N though, Dexter, one of the other questions Dexter wanted me to ask was, did you ever play any of the source material that the show was based off of? You know, the Punch Out video game for the Nintendo. The character is King Hippo is based off of a character from the video game Punch Out. Did you ever play Punch Out or have you ever tried it? No.
I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I've only ever played one video game.
Which
game? That video game was the Rory McIlroy Pro Golf.
Oh, you're a big golf fan, right? You're an avid golfer.
I have a golfer. Yeah, and I have never played a video game.
Don't worry about that.
I've watched him. I just find like my son-in-law plays lots of video games and he loves his video games. And he said, "Oh, come on, come and play with me." I get on the game and I'm, "Well, what does what? How does this?" And, shit, I'm dead. crap, I'm dead. Oh, I'm dead. So I can't even play the game. I get like 30 seconds in, I'm a dead man. So
games have come a long way where it's like now there's an easier way to like it can ease people into it, but it is very much like if it's not something you're used to, then it is brutal. It's like you're in and then you're out in like 2 seconds. You don't have a chance.
Yeah, it's all the controls, you know, the different controls.
Yeah.
From this to that, like the Star Wars game. Oh my God, it's tough. It's like I look at it, I'm going, how do you even know what you have to do? You know, and then there's the ones, you know, like the Call of Duty and all those. My brother played those, you know, online with other people, and see him get really mad. You sniped me, man. That's cheating. You know,
people get.
No.
Oh, that's funny. Kind of getting off of, I have one final question kind of related to your work. And once again, it's from Dexter. And then I have a couple more personal ones to ask you. I don't really have a good transition for this. This is in regards to Beast Wars and your role as Optimus Primal. Do you approach your performances of Optimus Prime and Optimus Primal the same or different because they're different, or do you consider them different characters completely?
I consider them different characters. I mean, I try to imbue both characters with the character traits that we want for Optimus. But Optimus Primal is, you know, it's sort of mammal based and Optimus Prime is robot based. So monkey. Truck, not monkey, you know?
Yeah.
And I've always thought that, you know, when I did the trilogy, the Unicron trilogy, I think they wanted me to sound like Peter Cullen.
Mm-hmm.
But in my ego went, no, I'm doing my way. But I liked it. You know, my way sounds okay too, but it wasn't the same as Peter Cullen. So But I can do that, no problem. It just takes a few minutes to get into the character. And there you go. But yeah, no, I approach them both the same way. The same. It's the story. The story sort of directs where you go. You know? It's not like you can't impose something onto the story. The story has to take you, not you take the story. You know.
Mm-hmm. No, I 100% understand.
Yeah.
So now on to some non-work related questions. Music. You are obviously we were talking a bit off mic. You are a musician, and you mentioned at the beginning of the episode. And off mic, you're playing a little piano for me. I heard that you can play a guitar. You're a lefty, but you can play a right-handed guitar without restringing the string. You can play a guitar without restringing the strings for a lefty.
That's right.
How did that come about?
When I was a kid, I was living in a group home. And a couple of the guys played guitar, and they all were playing. I said, I want to learn how to play guitar, but I knew nothing about a guitar. We're up the boonies, right? And I knew nothing about a guitar. So I picked up my friend's guitar, and I thought, how does this work? And then I saw a book, and where I learned how to play was off of Bob Dylan's Black Book. His song book with all his early songs in it, and it had all the chords and chord diagrams. And I thought, so if I put this and this like this, and the high strings are up, low strings are down, that makes sense to me. So I'll just play it that way. And that's how I played. And then when I discovered that there was such a thing as a left-handed guitar, too late. Because I'd already figured out how to play, and I can play almost anything that a right-handed guitar player can play. There's certain chords. An F major 6 is a bit tough for me because of the way it's shaped on the neck.
Mm-hmm.
Walking basses are sometimes tough because the palm of my hand covers the bass strings rather than the fingers. So.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I just compensate with different things. My style of playing is all about compensation. But apparently it does quite well. And there's a few people out there who are, Dick Dale, the guy from who did In the City. Dun, dun, dun. You know that guy, the surfer. Mm-hmm. He plays upside down. There's another session guy named Eric Gales who plays upside down and is one of the best guitar players around. He's brilliant. So there are several of us who play the guitar upside down and backwards, and it's just adaptation. That's all. There are certain for a classical style, classical style guitar. No, forget it. You have to be a right-handed. You have to play the other way just because of the way the classical music is written for a right hand person.
Yeah.
Left handed. So that's a bit tough, but, just for my own accompaniment, cause I'm primarily a singer and I can play all different styles of music and, very little limitation except for certain chord shapes. That's it.
What types of genres of music do you normally listen to? Like, what's your go-to thing if you're turning on the radio or putting on some type of music? Whether what's your go-to artist or genre?
Like this. I'm like playing that, I like playing blues, I like playing. Like that. I'm a big R&B guy,
mm-hmm.
big blues guy. I play different styles. I like folk music, a little bit of country, But mostly my big one is R&B and the blues.
Okay.
Big blues guy. Yeah. I'm one of these, you know. I've like that kind of music and all these, you know.
Listeners, I don't think you were expecting to get a serenade with a concert this episode, but you did. you got a concert for free. So go follow Gary on social media later and thank him.
Yeah, I just love playing, and I sit up here and I canoodle around, but I'm just now, for the last year, I've been studying theory and reading notation, and
yeah,
man, what a difference it makes. It's like it's pretty amazing what you can do, and so I'm really enjoying that, because even though I can't play it on guitar, I can still do the classical stuff on piano, which is fun. But I just like it because that's what I do. I was always a musician before I was an actor or anything else, and it's my go-to place for peace and quiet. I went and did a concert out in Birmingham last month at a Transformers convention.
Oh, okay.
And it went very, very well. People were they went a bit wild and liked the stuff that I did, and so I just, you know, every once in a while, I'll do that, go play for the gang, and I perform every Tuesday night.
Wait, you do perform every Tuesday night somewhere?
Every Tuesday night, I go. There's a little place down the street called the Corduroy, and my friend Don and myself, and Antoine and Stan, we get up there and play music every Tuesday night.
That's awesome.
About 13 years, yeah.
If I'm ever in Vancouver, I will have to check that out.
Yeah, it's really fun. We have a good time. Open mic and Don. If you ever look Don up, Don Alder on the internet, he's probably one of the world's greatest fingerstyle guitar players.
Okay.
Amazing player, and he's just like, just think of Alder the tree, Don Alder, and watch him play. He just came back from a tour of Germany. He's been in Germany and Europe for the last 5 months touring.
Wow.
And he's just, he blows my mind without a doubt. Just an amazing player. But,
well, I'm going to start wrapping things up here, Gary. I have two final questions for you. Thank you so much for spending some time with me this afternoon, this morning for you. This has been a lot of fun for me. I have two final questions, and I've started this year, ending my interviews with these. One is, I'm a huge fan of Alan Alda's podcast. Alan Alda has a podcast called Clear and Vivid, and he ends each of his interviews with seven quick questions that invite that people answer quickly. I'm not going to ask all seven questions. We'd be here for a while, but each one I always find is pretty unique and different. So, I heard you're an avid reader, so I thought this question was appropriate. What is a book, or which book changed your life?
Which book changed my life? Fiction or nonfiction?
Either or. Can be either or.
Isaac Asimov, Rendezvous with Rama.
Okay.
Was an amazing book. And also the other one was Stranger in a Strange Land, and Robert Heinlein. And that's science fiction, but one book that really affected me back in the day was a book called Siddhartha,
mm-hmm.
by an author named Hermann Hesse, which was
write that down. Sorry, go on.
Siddhartha was all about the Gautama Buddha, and it was a pretty amazing story. And I actually went on to read a lot of his books: The Glass Bead Game, Magister Ludi, The Glad Bee Game, and Steppenwolf, and all these. They're just, you know, they're books that inspire you. And I was reading another one by Yukio Mishima called Confessions of a Mask, but then I found out he was a hardcore Bushido kind of crazy man,
oh,
who had himself beheaded, committed seppuku and had himself beheaded back in the day.
Wow.
And, dude, this was probably in the 60s or late in the 70s.
Wow.
You're just a weirdo. And when you read his books, it's kind of, I'm going, yep, the guy's a weirdo. So, but it was, there were interesting stories, interesting books. I mean, I cannot tell you how many books I've read. All the Stephen Kings, I've read all the Gerald Seymour. Gerald Seymour, to me, is probably one of the greatest writers of all. And Stephen King, probably the most underrated writer. I mean, he's a bestseller writer.
Yeah.
But I'm reading his latest book called Fairy Tale. Oh, my God. What a great book. What a great read. I mean, it's just like, damn, that's a good read. I mean, and I have some books where, you know, you pick up the book and you go, just one more chapter. Just one more chapter. It's 3 o'clock in the morning and you're trying to go, one more chapter. And I've had a few like that. So I have a habit of, if I find an author that I really like, I will read everything by that author.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've read all of Gerald Seymour, I've read all of Stephen King, Craig Thomas, I've read all of his, read all of Stephen Leather, read all of, what's his name? Daniel De Silva.
Okay.
God, all these guys are just... they write such great stories, you know. And the guy who wrote I suffer from sometimers sometimes.
No, it's okay.
Soldier Spy, the guy who wrote Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Okay.
I read all of his books. I read Nicholas Montserrat, all his books. I got to tell you, I used to be crazy reader. I used to read 3 books a week.
John Le Carre was the author of
John Le Carre, yeah. Amazing, amazing writing. And that's what I feel is being missed these days, especially for young people, because young people, my wife, my ex-wife, never read a novel. Never read a one. One. Technical books, but no novels.
That's it. It's interesting. So, like, I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest reader, but I have read novels, and I actually want to get back into reading novels. I'm just bad at time management. That's the thing. It's not that I don't have time. I'm just bad at time management. So,
the thing is what I do is that when I'm lying in bed, I'll read a chapter or 2 chapters.
I need to start doing that.
Put it down and put it down. You know, that's perfectly okay. The Stephen King book I'm reading now, I'm just reading a couple of chapters at a time, and it's fine because I want it to last for a long time because it's a great read, you know. And I just picked up Lee Child.
Oh, okay.
You know Lee Child, the Jack Reacher.
Yeah, the Jack Reacher books, yeah.
I've read every single one, and I just got a new one the other day, and I haven't read it yet because I've got it lined up with 2 or 3 other books, but that'll be my it's either a hotel room book or a set book when I'm on set.
Did you see, did you watch the new show based off of Reacher? Not the Tom Cruise movies, but the Reacher TV series on Amazon.
Love them. The guy's great.
Yeah, Alan Ritchson. Wonderful.
Yeah. My only objection to him is he's kind of handsome. He's very handsome. As described in the book, he's all rough and rugged and been beat up and looked like 20 miles of bad road, but he doesn't look like 20 miles of bad road. He looks like
what's even more nuts, if you've ever seen, so Alan Ritchson was in another TV show a couple years ago called Blue Mountain State. And Blue Mountain State is basically, it's a raunchy college humor, like American Pie-esque style of humor TV show. It's really, and he plays the captain of the football team named Thad. And if you see his performance as Thad versus Reacher, they are 180.
Wow.
Thad is this over the top, like, I mean, it's borderline cartoon. Like he screeches. It's a funny show. I liked it a lot. But it is very over the top, and it's definitely a raunchy show, but it's funny. It just, so when I saw him as Reacher, I'm like, I'm so confused. You're not, like, it's just a completely different character. Like, it's so far removed from what I knew him as. And I don't know what he's done in between, because Blue Mountain State ended a couple, like a good, like, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. So I don't know what he was doing in between then, but just to see that transition is wild.
Well, I thought he was great in Reacher, way, way better. I mean, I like Tom Cruise, but Tom Cruise was so miscast as Jack Reacher. Mm-hmm. Tom Cruise is only 5'7" or 5'6". He's just a little guy. I mean, he could never, you know, I mean, they can choreograph it to make it look like he beats the shit out of guys. But Jack Reacher in the books, because the kind of guy who had hands that were so big he'd grab you by the top of your head and lift you off the ground, you know.
Yeah.
I always picture a muscle-bound Liam Neeson, you know, playing that role. Or anyone, for, you know, anyone who's another one, play it, Joe Don Baker. There was another one to be a good choice.
Oh, really? I know him from the Bond movies. I would never have thought of him as a...
Yeah. A big old gorilla. He's a big gorilla.
Yeah.
But I've seen him in another one called The Getaway. He was very good in The Getaway.
I'll have to check that out then, because I like seeing the other movie. I'm a huge James Bond fan. I haven't read all the books, but I'm a huge Bond movie fan. I need to actually read all the books.
I've watched every single one of them over and over and over again.
They're wonderful movies.
Yeah. Pretty tired. Right.
But I could, oh man, I got to hold myself back. I could talk about James Bond for hours. Final question before I kind of ask you just where people can find you online. My wife, Courtney, doesn't really follow any of this stuff. Like, she follows what I do, but she's not into video games and cartoons and all the more like nerdy stuff that I'm into. So I always ask her for a question, because it's fun to get a question from someone. She doesn't know what you do. She doesn't know what any of my guests do. It's a completely outside perspective. So I call this section questions from Courtney. Questions from Courtney, where I solicit a question. And the question that she sent me for this one: what is your favorite beverage?
My favorite beverage, my absolute favorite beverage, is English breakfast tea.
Okay.
That's my answer. My favorite alcoholic beverage is Proper 12 Irish whiskey. My favorite alcoholic beverage. My favorite soft drink is those ice flavored water. Man, they're good.
I don't know if I've had that.
Zero calories, carbonated, different flavors.
Okay.
Delicious. Yeah, I love those. But that's that's three, but tea is my go-to. Like,
that's a good choice. It's a healthy choice too.
Healthy choice. I love my tea, and I do love a shot of Irish whiskey before I go to bed. It just seems to help me get to sleep really quick.
Good choice.
I woke up this morning at 4 o'clock going, shit. I have to take the garbage out. So I had to get up and get dressed, take the garbage and recycling out because the garbage truck comes at 7. I didn't want to sleep in. So
I feel that there was a couple nights. There's been some nights recently where I'll be in bed. I'll get to bed at midnight. I'll go to bed super late, lay in bed, super exhausted. I'm like, ah, fuck. And I got to go outside and it's a long walk to our driveway. Anyway, let's wrap up this episode. Gary, this has been a pleasure. I've had so much fun talking to you.
Thank you.
Where can everybody find you online? And is there anything you'd like to promote?
Well, I got a new movie coming up with Josh Duhamel and Kevin Dillon.
Mm-hmm.
Norman, I can't remember his last name.
Reedus?
Buddy Games 2, which is coming up, which is fun. And there is another Buddy Games 1. But this is Buddy Games 2. And then I've got a movie coming out with Reba McEntire called The Hammer.
Okay.
And I have a film that'll be on Paramount Plus pretty soon, I think, called Disquiet with Jonathan Rhys-Meyer and myself in the, lead roles in it. And it's a kind of a horror movie. With a psychological thriller. It's pretty cool, and I have a great character role in it. And I have two shows that are coming up on the film festival circuit. They're the playing at the Whistler Film Festival coming up, and that is one is called Exile with Adam Beach,
mm-hmm.
And the other one is called Colorblind. And where I played the lead character in it. And it's a BIPOC kind of a film about racism and color blindness, funnily enough.
Mm.
It's kind of a great little redemption kind of movie. And I think people will like that. And it made it into the film festival in the Whistler, and that's a big one. So it's doing well and it's getting good reviews. Got a few cartoons. Well, I got one big cartoon series coming out and probably in several months. And unfortunately I can't talk about it, but it's very funny and it will be on somewhere somehow. And as soon as I get the go ahead, I will apprise people of it. And I can give you one line.
All right.
One line is this. What kind of monster should you be afraid of, children? And they go, well, I don't know. This one? I said, no, there's only one kind, and that's the dangerous kind. That's it. That's what we do. So just imagine monsters, children, and me.
I like it. I'm excited for it. Is there any social media that you'd like to plug?
Social media, I don't really partake. I quit Twitter.
Don't blame you.
There's too many trolls. I am on Instagram, and I am on Reddit. What am I on Reddit? Let me know. I'm not going to even tell you. Yes. /artistic-brief7936 is my online on Reddit.
All right.
I don't know why my avatar is Stewie in a wig and Jackson outfit. So, but and then for things like Instagram, I come on there every once in a while. My Instagram is just Gary Chalk.
All right.
Yeah. And I got lots of stuff under Gary Chalk on YouTube. You just key in my name and it's like lots of stuff. You can actually see a clip from my very first cartoon.
Oh, really?
It's called Hiawatha.
Yeah, you mentioned at the beginning of the episode. So you can find clips of that online.
Yeah, I posted it online, I think. I've shared it somewhere. Where is it? Here it is.
There it is. The Legend of Hiawatha.
Oh, here we are.
As Majiku is told of the winds that blow through the bowl of the sky, Hiawatha listened. But as the long hours passed...
That was in 1983. Many wonders. I play Hiawatha, and I also play that other guy. But nothing of the dad. I wished most
to hear. That's wild.
Never return when Winona, my mother, died. Know that I wish to be near you.
Can you not understand that I am not like mortal men, O Hiawatha? The master of the...
That's so cool.
Playing with... Playing against myself there.
It's got to be so cool to see some of the work that like doesn't get as... that you don't see as much on, like, it's not on like streaming services, but if you go to YouTube, you can find clips from like projects you worked on that you like, they maybe don't have a release other places, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's the only place you can find them sometimes, on YouTube.
Yeah.
Lots of stuff on YouTube. But now they want to... I can you please put me in touch with a stunt guy so I can see how to get into stunts? And I said, no.
Wait, someone messaged you on YouTube for that?
Somebody just asked, just sent me a message. Can you get me into stunts? And I said, no.
What? That's an interesting cold call. Like,
yeah, well, I know lots of stunt people because I'm on the board of my union, and the stunts is a part of our union. And I have a lot of friends who are stunts, because I used to do stunts myself back in the day. I don't do it anymore. I'm too old. I mean, you can get hurt.
Even when you're young, you can get hurt.
Well, I've lost a tooth here one time and had some good scrapes and falls, but nothing serious.
That's wild.
But one of my friends, that's named Melissa Stubbs, is one of the top stunt women in the world.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you'll see her. She does, she just finished doing the last James Bond movie, I think. And she did,
he did all the
stunts for the School for Good and Evil. She was the stunt coordinator on School for Good and Evil. And she also did, what else? Oh, like, you know, X-Men and things like that. Just
that's awesome.
She's an incredible stunt woman. Yeah. Lovely, beautiful woman. Look her up, Melissa Stubbs. Great gal.
I will
have Ireland right now.
I will have to check that out. But let's wrap up this episode real quick.
Yeah, here we go.
for me, as usual, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at StillLoadingPod on all of them. If you want to email me, you can email me stillloadingcontact@gmail.com. If you want to support the show, you can do it in a number of ways. You can give You can give it a 5-star rating or review on Apple Podcast or whichever podcasting app you use, because that helps more people find the show. And it makes me feel warm and fuzzy. And I like feeling warm and fuzzy. And you can support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/stillloadingpod for $1 a month. You'll get all the episodes a few days early at better audio quality, and access to a patron exclusive Discord for $4 a month. You can get all of that at the $1 level, plus 2 bonus episodes a month. And then for $5 a month, you get everything I mentioned at the $1 and $4 levels, plus access to an exclusive Patreon podcast called Still Bonding, where me and my friend Erica go through all Bond over all the James Bond movies. We, at the time this episode will be out, Goldfinger will have been released and Thunderball will be out in a week or two. So if you are interested in James Bond or just me going on nearly 3-hour long episode rants of my love for the series, for each movie, please consider checking that out. patreon.com/stillloadingpod. The most important shout out is the Bit by Bit Foundation. The Bit by Bit Foundation is a nonprofit organization whose mission is to put video games and video game consoles in the hands of kids receiving inpatient care at hospitals. So if you want to support them, go to bitbybitfoundation.org and consider donating. And that is all the time I have for you today. Gary, once again, thank you. Thank you so much for joining me. This was a lot of fun.
Well, thank you for having me. I mean, you can see me on Instagram, you can see me on Reddit, you can see me on Facebook. I have the fan page as well as my band page, my music page, and my personal page, which is basically Gary Chalk. So if you click it in there, There's only one other Gary Chalk that I think is on there, and he's from Australia. And we actually met in Brisbane a few years ago, and he's retired now. He's a retired homeopathic practitioner. So, yeah, I'm pretty easy to find. You just click my name with two R's, and you'll find me, no problem.
And that will do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening, and I will see you all next time.